listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch, as you always are here. Wednesdays, 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and I always talk to wonderful guests and experts about things you ask me, particularly psychological issues and also any kind of relationship issues. And today we're talking about ADHD, ADD. It seems like an epidemic in this country, doesn't it? I mean, everybody we're talking to has or knows a child or possibly an adult with ADHD. And what is going on? And how come we are seeing more and more of this these days? And we're going to find out about that and some new breakthrough information about how we can manage that in children and adults as well. Significant results with this new protocol we're going to be talking about, and just everything you always wanted to know about ADHD. My special guest today is Connie McReynolds. Hi, Dr. McReynolds. How are you?
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much for bringing us this book. Here it is, folks. Solving the ADHD Riddle. Huh? Jump on and don't go anywhere, because you're going to find out so much information from my special guest. She's a specialist. Let me give you some information about her. And Connie, I always say this about people who are as professional and amazing as you, that I could go on for half an hour about your accolades, but I'll make it as brief as I can. You're an esteemed and accomplished professional with over 30 years of experience as a licensed psychologist and certified rehabilitation counselor. And she is the visionary founder of prominent neurofeedback clinics right here in Southern California. And Dr. McReynolds specializes in working with children and adults ranging from 5 to 90 years old. Woohoo! We have some help for our older patients as well. And you have an innovative approach, which we're going to be talking about. It aims to reduce or completely eliminate conditions associated with ADHD, such as anger and depression, chronic pain, learning problems, trauma, all these things that go along with it. A lot of the behavioral issues that we see in children right now. Oh, we're also going to be talking about how to help parents and specialist teachers, you know, work with children who have these disorders. Also, she has clinics. They're wonderful. I'll turn you on to those as well. You don't have to be in Southern California to get information about them and use them. Dr. McReynolds has successfully brought relief and transformation to countless individuals. And she's authored more than 40 publications, providing valuable insights and advanced knowledge in your field. Also, she has delivered over 200 presentations on a wide range of conditions. And what else can I say? You are one of the top experts. And as I mentioned, I love to refer this book to a lot of teachers I work with who work with children who have ADHD, as well as patients who have children. So welcome to the show again. Nice to have you here.
Thank you so much. It was very nice of you.
Oh, I'm always so interested in what attracted my special authors to their particular field. So can you share a little bit about that and why you decided to write this book?
Oh, absolutely. You know, certainly the background is important, and I have a little bit of it, as you alluded to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, maybe sometimes you don't know quite so much of that, but.
Well, hey, who knows, you know? Right, exactly.
It is what it is. I think I talked a little bit about it in the book, but my mother taught second grade for 32 years in the same classroom. And
wow.
I kind of joke a little bit that I kind of grew up in second grade, right. Really kind of watching her teach. And an aunt was a dean of a college of education, and another uncle was a professor at a university. And wow. I taught for 25 years in academe myself, and a rehab counselor and a licensed psychologist. And so You know, if I look back at any point, you know, 10 or 15, 20 years ago, I would certainly not have ever guessed I would be here today. I just don't think sometimes careers are, you can foreshadow that much. You know, you just kind of have to do what's the next thing to do in your life. And that's really what happened here.
Right.
I was recruited out. I came out to Southern California from Ohio on a sabbatical, 17 years ago. I needed a break from the Ohio weather in the winter.
Oh, well, that's great. Yeah, I bet.
So I ended up actually being recruited into that university then a year later to come
and
build an institute. And part of that institute, the creativity that was afforded at that time was really, you know, take this, we've got this space, we have this new building, everyone else has a lot to do, you're new, we're going to kind of ask you to step into this and see what you can do with it.
Yeah.
And it was from that opportunity that really everything evolved.
A colleague
came to me and said, hey, we have this thing, we'd like for you to run with it and let's see what we can do. And so here we are 15 years later.
That is wonderful. Good for you. It's so nice to have you. Isn't it lovely to get into a new state and then get an amazing position? How wonderful is that?
Yes.
And look at what you've done for everyone else and how you have helped so many people in your life. I don't think a lot of people really understand how to diagnose ADHD or ADD, whatever, that's attention deficit disorder, not attention hyperactive attention disorder. But can you just sort of clinically define what ADHD is?
Well, I think that actually is the broad-based challenge, at least in this country, if not globally. Because once this diagnostic manual came out several years ago with the new criteria, so to speak, professionals around the globe said, well, almost anyone can qualify for ADHD.
I think that's me.
Right. I think it's me. Everyone was saying, well, I think I might have this.
Yeah, right.
Well, and it doesn't mean you don't, but doesn't mean that everyone has it. That's really the push-pull. Within the field, within, I think, parents' world, the teacher's world, and just anyone who's working with children or adults.
Sure.
And it really is the difficulty. And what I have found is that children show up in my clinics over the last 15 years with a whole litany, a long list of different types of diagnoses that I'm meeting with this child, and I'm looking at this child, and I'm interacting with this child, and I'm thinking, I don't know how they got to this particular diagnosis. It might have been ADHD. It might have been some of my least favorite are oppositional defiant disorder, intermittent explosive disorder. Some of those, I struggle with. But
I bet,
So what I ended up doing was finding this particular assessment, and we started running it. And in 20 minutes, I'm looking at 37 areas of auditory and visual processing that captures the description so accurately of these children that when I present this assessment back to the parents in that initial intake, they sit there and they're just blinking their eyes because the terms that are in this report are ones they just used with me sitting in the room while their child was in a different room having the assessment. And the accuracy of this and just the feedback that parents give has been so profound that it evolved. And so now I rely on this a lot. Because in 20 minutes, we can figure a lot of things out and then have a plan to move forward within an hour and a half. We've got a plan.
Wow, that is amazing. So did you create, and I want to talk about this a little bit down the line, but the IVA, it's the IVA-2 assessment, right? Is that the one you're talking about?
It is the one I'm speaking of. And I wish I could claim that, but I don't. I just claim being able to figure out a little bit of how it applies perhaps more broadly than maybe originally designed from the standpoint of at first, it was designed to diagnose ADHD or other types of things, and it will give a kind of a forecast of a diagnosis. Right. What I really started realizing after about 5 years of all of this is that we are dealing with something else here that no one else is talking about, and I think we need to talk about it. Which is, you know, this catchment term of ADHD is just too big. It's too general. It doesn't tell us anything about what's going on with a particular child. So it really, right. other than maybe qualifying you
my
for
goodness,
services,
right.
which is true, it doesn't really right. help us get to the bottom of the problem.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And do you think it's being overdiagnosed in this country? I mean, on children and perhaps.
Well, I think it's a real mixed bag when we think about this, because I do believe there are millions of children that are being misdiagnosed with all types right. of diagnoses,
right.
being channeled into treatments that aren't working
right.
and that aren't yielding positive outcomes and results. Mm.
Right.
We have children who are being, streamed yeah. into certain types of services in schools that work maybe for some, don't work for others. And so what right. is the common denominator here? Medications yeah. work for some, don't work for others. Is it the diagnosis, or are we actually looking at something that we don't even know what we're looking at? And wow. I tend to fall on the latter of this, which
sure.
is, after 15 years of this and a lot of research, mm-hmm. because about 10 years ago, I thought there has to be someone out here writing about this. And I dug for years
yeah.
looking for it. And it wasn't out there. It wasn't in the literature, wow. at least that I could uncover.
Sure.
And so I initially then began realizing, I think we've figured something out here. I think there's something different going on. Mm-hmm. I think I need to tell the story of this. So I published a research
yeah.
article internationally
yes.
to start getting the word out there.
Yeah.
And that helped some, but some of those magazines don't and journal articles don't get to the broad based
right.
So sure. that's really ultimately why I felt like a book's going to be a better venue for that, a better avenue to get into adults and parents' hands mm-hmm. and teachers' hands to see if we can't change mm-hmm. the narrative around this diagnosis yeah. of ADHD.
Right. Beautifully said, Connie. I really appreciate it. And I mean, your book covers so much information that is, to me, it may be available online, but it's not the research that you've done. I mean, when we go on to WebMD or that's great, but your book really covers the riddle of ADHD and understanding the real cause and how we misunderstand the problem. Also, you cover a little bit about how the brain works. I was blown away about how you described that. We'll get a little bit into that as well okay. for people. And the neural feedback system and how to empower our children and our students for that matter. And also adults who you've worked with up to 90 years old
yes.
who have been diagnosed, which is just amazing how people have gone all their lives and say, well, I'm just a dummy, or, I hear my elders say things like that. It's like, I just never really took to school. I was a dummy and I was the bad child. And it's like, let's revisit this a little bit. And your book really has enlightenment about those statements and really kind of helping folks, take a look.
Because it's so important for people yeah. to understand that this isn't a matter of intelligence. And sadly, that's where children go.
Yes.
That's where adults have gone in their lifetimes. That language, I'm a dummy, it's like, probably not.
No,
but you might have
exactly.
something else that has been in your way that you just didn't have the language to describe
right.
until now.
Oh,
and
exactly.
When we give them the language and help them understand what this really is, it's totally a game changer for people. I've had grown men weep once they finally have an answer.
Right.
A gentleman come in who had lost numerous jobs. He was in his 50s. He walked in. We ran this assessment, delivered the results to him, and he just started weeping. He said that he never could understand why he couldn't remember what his boss was telling him to do, and he was in jeopardy of losing yet another job because he couldn't hang on to it. And it's like, well, his
sure.
auditory memory wasn't working well. He couldn't hang on to what was being said. And his only thought on that was, well, I must not be very smart. And then children
right.
starting in elementary school
yes.
start this language within themselves. And it's
right.
heartbreaking
yes.
to see that. And
aww.
It just, we have to change it. We just
it really
have
is.
To change it.
And good for you, Connie, so much for, you know, turning us on to this book, Solving the ADHD Riddle, The Real Cause and Lasting Solutions to Your Child's Struggle to Learn. Here it is, folks. If you want to get it, we'll give you more information about it. Of course, it's on Amazon and everywhere else you can find in brick and mortar. But, you know, it's really helping you understand your child and or adults. Friends, yourself, you know, who have been struggling, you know, with certain symptoms that we call ADHD or ADD. So it's probably been overdiagnosed. And I want to find out what you think about that. And also about what's this thing about medications? Oh, my God, I hear these people tell me, oh, yeah, we put our child on, you know, Ritalin or Adderall or the newer one when they were seven. I'm like, really? Is that, how do you feel about that, Connie?
Well, it is a very hard call for parents in today's world, because there is a lot of pressure in some of these systems, academic systems, where parents have walked in and said the school has told them to either put your child on medication or we're going to kick your child out of here. Oh, well, they're not supposed to be able to say that.
No.
First of all,
like, no.
Okay, that's not what should be said at all here.
Yeah.
However, people are walking in with it having been said to them.
Sure.
Yeah. I first want to say that there are a lot of good places out there, a lot of places doing a lot of good work. So this is not a blanket statement. However,
right.
The whole concept of the medication, when you don't have anything else, you know, that may be all you've got.
Right.
Well, we have other things now. And so parents 15 years ago started coming in and saying, you know, we've been down the behavioral intervention road.
Right.
We've been down all the medication roads. We are still standing where we were when we started this journey. And our son or daughter is still failing out in school, or behaviors are still problematic. Something isn't working here. And then I had another set of parents come in that would say, you know, we really are electing not to go down the medication route. We've known of these other parents or children who've struggled on this, and we're choosing to do something different.
Sure.
You know, what can we do?
Right.
So the medications, yes, they may work to get rid of some of the symptoms. And I've written about that in the book. Is that, yes, they can dial down some of the symptoms, but the research that's out there, which I quote, and it's cited in the book, I'm not making it up, and I'm just pulling it from what's in the literature, is that children who've been on the medications even for long periods of time, when they come off the meds, are no better off than they were for children who never were on the medications.
Wow.
So that opened my eyes substantially when I started uncovering this literature.
Sure. Sure.
Which then led to more questions. It's like, well, if this isn't getting at it, then what are we dealing with here?
Right.
And then again, delving into these auditory and visual processing problems, it was like the light bulb popped on one day. It's like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Because if the medication is designed to treat XYZ, but these children have ABC, then it's a complete mismatch for what's going on.
Oh, it sure is.
It's a mismatch.
Yeah.
For some children, it may work. A lot of children, it isn't. So we have to be open-minded enough to say, okay, there's got to be something else. And that's really where we came in. And this
book
started evolving out of that.
Gosh. And in terms of behavioral treatments, you know, it breaks my heart to hear parents who are really angry and upset and frustrated because of the tantrums or the, you know, outbursts or some of the violence and that their children, you know, is displaying. And it breaks my heart that these parents, you know, I mean, they're people and they're losing it. And, you know, as a licensed psychologist yourself, you understand the trauma and damage that that can do to children who may be diagnosed with this. Can you talk a little bit more about how that can affect them?
So it's all intertwined with these auditory and visual processing problems. So for an example, if a child has an auditory problem, and let's just pick one of the many that it could be that's out there, it's not just any one thing, but let's just say for this instance that this child is having difficulty paying attention, common label, not paying attention. Well, when we run this assessment, we find out that there are neuronal pathways in the brain that are weak in the area of where this child needs to pay attention. So it isn't going to matter how many times a parent or a teacher implores this child to, quote, pay attention, if this pathway in the brain isn't strong enough to, quote, pay attention, then how's the child going to be able to pay attention? So everyone gets frustrated. Sure. Everyone thinks this is willful bad behavior. Sure. This child's just intentionally not paying attention, intentionally drifting off, looking out the window, not remembering what's going on. And people get frustrated. Yeah. And then punishment ensues. Sure. And so one of the telltale signs here is if the punishment hasn't made a difference, we may need to look at what's going on. Because if I can't, for example, if I cannot remember what you just said to me, and you repeatedly are asking me to do something, but I cannot remember it. And I know that adults around me seem to get mad at me because I don't seem to do what I'm supposed to be doing, but I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yes. Yeah. Mm.
You're going to have behaviors. You're going to have some children just withdraw. And so sometimes we see a difference in the genders in the classrooms and at home.
Right.
So sometimes the little girls or even big girls will just withdraw.
Sure.
They get quiet. They pull back.
Sure.
They don't engage. And then sometimes because boys are wired differently than girls and there's a different approach to things, sometimes they act out. Now, I've had girls act out and I've had boys withdraw. So again, it's not just a hard line here.
Right.
But the behaviors are what we have to learn how to decode. And that's what I was really stumbling on 10, 15 years ago, is that these behaviors are really trying to tell us something, but we don't know what the language is.
Oh.
We're not figuring out the language of what these behaviors are saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one of the things in the book, which really is designed to cue and key in parents and teachers, that when we look at these behaviors, let's peel back maybe the interpretation that we're giving.
Okay.
And let's see if perhaps there's something else that may be helping us understand a little bit differently what might be going on with this child.
Wow. Is that great? What? Now, you're talking about auditory and visual issues. You're not talking about literal, oh, my child is nearsighted or my child has, you know, problems with their hearing, that kind of thing. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that so we can understand?
Yes, I'm really glad you brought that up because I think that is very important because it can get a little confusing initially.
Sure.
Because if I'm talking about visual processing, people think, well, does my child need glasses?
Right.
Well, it doesn't hurt to have your child's eyes checked.
Sure.
You know, they may have that, but this could be that and something else, or their vision may be absolutely fine, and it could be this other thing. So for visual processing, and I've provided a checklist at the end of both the auditory chapter and the visual chapter to help parents maybe decode some of the behaviors that they are observing in their children.
Right.
So for a child with visual processing, it could be one, it could look like this. Auditory processing could look like something else.
Yeah.
But then to the auditory piece, it isn't about hearing. So but again, you may want to check the hearing.
Right.
But it isn't about hearing.
Right.
This is about how the brain is working with, in other words, taking in, processing auditory, verbal information or visual information. What is the brain doing with that? Is the brain able to interact in an expected manner and the person be able to respond in an expected manner?
Right.
And
right.
When that breaks down, then that's the opportunity we have to be able to decipher, if you will, what else might be going on here. There could something else happening here.
Right. And I love the way you explain and break it down in the book. And we're not going to get into super details about that, about how, you know, the brain of children and or adults perhaps works who probably do have ADHD and or ADD. By the way, I just want to show you the book here. There it is. Connie McReynolds, Dr. Connie, by the way, and Solving the ADHD Riddle. The Real Cause and Lasting Solutions to Your Child's Struggle to Learn. It's almost like an encyclopedia and a step-by-step. And it also gives great examples of children. I really loved your examples of the different types of issues that children were having, and yet they all shared that diagnosis. So those are really cool too. Mm-hmm. Because I, you know, talk to parents. I don't work with children particularly, but I work with adults. But I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting because, as you know, we can have a lot of diagnoses. And how many times have we had three or four people come in with a diagnosis? And you meet with them and they're so different. Their situation is unique. Yeah. You know, it's almost unrecognizable between one to the other, but the labels have been similar.
Right.
And I've often said I could have 10 children walk into my clinics on a single day, and all 10 of them are going to look very different. They're going to have different conditions, different challenges, and different ways of learning. So it's important to get underneath all of that.
So what are some of the signs, and how do you determine if they're having this going on in the brain, the visual or the auditory issues?
Mm-hmm. Well, for the visual, for example, I kind of like to start there because we really don't even think about that one very much. We always think about, it's auditory kinds of things.
Right,
it's always
auditory.
Yeah. But there's a whole equal amount of visual processing that can be affecting children. And this can look really confusing for adults and teachers because we're not geared to even consider this.
Sure.
So, for example, let's say a child has very messy handwriting. How many times have we heard that story? Mm-hmm. Oh, this child, the letters are messy. They leave out letters. They're not copying things correctly from the board. Mm. You know, that's number one. Spelling lists are a mess. You know, you just, parents talk about this, and, you know, I've got a couple of examples in the book of what this can look like. Let's just say there are other things going on in the room. So I kind of joke a little bit. A butterfly goes by and they follow the butterfly.
Right.
You know, that's exactly what's happening here. People walk by and they're supposed to be focusing on their spelling test or whatever. And someone walks by and their attention is just constantly pulled to other things going on around them. So they look very distracted.
Right.
They're the kid who loses everything that they
do. Right?
They're the kid that loses the keys, can't find the shoes, loses the backpack, can't find the homework. The backpack, you look in it, it's a train wreck inside there. The room is always a disaster. It looks like a train wreck happened in the bedroom. They can't figure out how to make the bed. They leave their toys strewn out all over. Maybe they bump into things all the time. They're falling down. There's all kinds of things that this visual processing actually gives us cues about. But if we don't know what that is, we just think they're, quote, inattentive. They're just not paying attention to their world. You know, why can't you remember where you put your shoes?
Yeah.
Why can't you remember where your homework is? Why can't you remember to turn this in?
Yeah.
It's all the why can't yous.
Right, exactly. And or you are being whatever. You are being disrespectful. You are being naughty. You know, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And the child's going, huh?
I don't know what's going on. What do you mean? And so the pressure, the children end up in pressure cookers with this. They just end up in pressure cookers because they can't figure out what they're doing, quote, wrong. Hmm. And they can't figure out what to do to get it, quote, right.
Correct. No, that makes a lot of sense. And again, this is just all, it's just like flooding. It's like, it's amazing how many children we're hearing about are diagnosed and or getting, we're seeing all of these changes in children who cannot, as you said, cannot pay attention. They cannot focus. They're fidgety. They're always doing that. Is there anything in the environment, or is this an inherited disease that we never really noticed before?
Well, that's a really great question because, as you know, there's always been this debate about nature versus nurture. You know, is this a genetic predisposition? Is it an environmental influence? You know, what is it?
Sure.
I don't have the answer to that. I'll be quite honest, because it seems like it comes in every form imaginable these days. There are parents that come in. I run the assessment. I'm going over the results, and they're sitting there going, I think you're describing me. I think they're describing my spouse or the child's father yikes. Or mother. Right. So there does seem to be some piece of that. But again, we can't pull out. Is that genetics? Is it environment? Is it just what they've learned? Is it something deeper? You know, we don't have necessarily all of those answers just yet. But the key, I think, right. with all of this right. is really just understanding that this exists. And yes, I think there are factors that perhaps have increased the amount of this that's going on. I do think we're more aware than we used to be. And I used the example of my mother back, you know, many decades ago, and the little boy who couldn't learn how to read in her class, and what she did over the right. summer with right. him to the university. They discovered right. he had something called dyslexia, which mm-hmm. was hardly heard of at that time.
Oh, sure. Exactly.
You know, so yes, that was hardly heard of back in those days, one of the first cases right. she ever heard of, and certainly in the school where she taught. And so the teaching center came up with some ways to help him learn how to read. Mm-hmm. But I will say, having grown up in second grade for all those years, she had maybe one child a year out of 20, 22, mm-hmm. 23 children. Wow. And if you walk into today's classrooms of second graders, the preponderance does seem to be much higher.
Yes.
And there is literature out there about mm-hmm. FaceTime, some of how much time children are spending with electronics. There's good right. research out there that said children under the age of 2 should not have any access to flat screens of any kind. Yep. And, you know, I've seen babies holding cell phones.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
So yeah. there's research out there that says that's changing how the brain develops in young wow. children mm-hmm. because young children should be in a 3D tactile world, not right. a 2D flat screen
yes.
world.
Yes. And their brains are oriented towards the 2D mm-hmm. rather than, right.
rather than the 3D. And yeah. so then there's also these high impact games that I talk about.
A lot. Right.
I started calling them high impact and low impact.
right.
term.
They're all impactful, I think. But
they are. It's just which level are you going for and what's the outcome that you do want to achieve here.
Yes.
And so these high impact games are absolutely designed to keep kids buying into this. Yes. And they have ways of linking all these kids together, and they're doing all these things. And so there's all this supposed social interaction, which mm-hmm. is they're nothing more than a 2D screen in front of you, mm-hmm. maybe someone on a headphone. Mm-hmm. So you're not really sure. socializing in a meaningful way
sure.
with an actual person in the room, to where you have to learn how to read body language and nuances of interpersonal communication. That's mm-hmm. not happening. It's
right.
vacant. That's
right. Oh my gosh.
So, yeah. you know, there's pluses yeah. and minuses to all of that. I mean, mm-hmm. we use low impact video games, right. which I'll talk about a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
the key here is just the intensity of some of these programs. And I cite research that went back to the late 90s that identified the impact on the neurotransmitter, the brain chemical called dopamine, mm-hmm. and just what some of these games are literally, I believe, designed to do, which is to increase the amount of dopamine in the brain.
Right.
And some children with attention problems don't have enough dopamine. It's kind of a feel-good hormone or
sure.
brain chemical. And if sure. you don't have enough of that, you're kind of feeling off. And you play a right. game and you get a dump of that into your brain, you feel good. Mm. You're feeling good, you want more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I recently treated a young, like a 12-year-old, who has become completely addicted
wow.
to these video games. And when the parents started trying to titrate this down or reduce it, the mm-hmm. child became incredibly violent. And was
yes.
recently 5150'd out here in California for
right.
smashing
wow.
Items in the house because
right.
as they were trying to wean this child's brain off of this, he was having severe withdrawls.
Sure.
So it's a real deal for some
sure
of these children.
Is. Oh, my goodness. It really is. So interesting you said that, because, I mean, to treat other disorders, as you know, like schizophrenia or schizoaffective or, some of the psychoses, disorders, they have the dopamine antagonists. Mm-hmm. The medication, they're called antipsychotics. Isn't that interesting that there's too mm-hmm. much, perhaps that's the dopamine theory, too much mm-hmm. dopamine is being produced in their brain. And if we're inducing this in children with these video games and addicting them to a flood of the dopamine, that's scary stuff, Dr. Connie. Wow.
Well, it certainly is something that should give pause for consideration, I think. And that's a part of what I do in the intake is one of the questions I ask is how much screen time are we looking at each day and each week? And what are the consequences of this? Yeah. And some folks have done some good research on this and identified ways and signs mm-hmm. and then mm-hmm. things that can be done that parents can do to mm-hmm. help reduce that.
Interesting stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the IVA2 assessment and then how that sort of leads you into deciding whether the neural feedback will help. What mm-hmm. what does that assessment do to help diagnose?
It's just an amazing assessment. I've been using it for the better part of the 15 years I've been doing this. And really, it's looking at 37 areas of auditory and visual processing, and it's all computer-based, where the child sits at the computer, follows the instructions on the mm-hmm. screen, mm-hmm. and clicks a mouse for about 20 minutes.
Wow.
And that generates a 15-page report that's going to break it out across mm-hmm. all of these areas of brain processing so that we can sit down. I sit down with the parents, then I mm-hmm. go over this with them during the intake. And we identify those areas that are great, that are working great. It's like play to the strength because this is where the strength is. This spot over here, not so much. So if you're trying to give multi-step instructions to this little one, you're not going to get too far because he or she's going to hear about three words and be off on something else.
Interesting.
So it's very interesting. And then that sometimes is used. I'll sign that and we can use that then for sometimes requesting accommodations in the schools. Because it really pulls back the label of ADHD and gets down to the what I call brass tacks. It's like, what's really going on with this child or adult? Mm-hmm. What's happening here? And then the beauty of this is, through our interpretation then and understanding of what that assessment material is, then we will create training plans. So I kind of call them they're training plan for your brain. So it's like a brain training program. It's like going to the gym, and so I'll tell parents, the consistency here is the same as if you're going to the gym.
That's right.
So you have to be consistent with this.
Right.
And so we do about 10 hours of the training, two or three times a week, and then we come back and we use this assessment to measure progress toward the bigger goals.
Wow.
And so with that, the parents have hardcore data, evidence-based information that we look at. It's like, okay, here was the first one. Now here we are 10 hours later, brain training. Here are the areas that have improved. Here are the areas that are still weak. Mm-hmm. I'd recommend that we adjust the training plan now for the next 10 hours so that we can see if we can't get this across the finish line here. And the good news with this is, unlike the gym, with this, the brain tends to hold on to this, so you don't have to keep coming back to see me.
Oh, that's interesting. I love that.
You're right. So I say we love our clients, but we want them to go out and live their lives.
That's right. So basically, whatever issues are figured out from the test, the IVA2, then, you sort of designate their weaknesses and or their strengths. And then the particular neurofeedback program addresses these weaknesses and helps. So is it actually retraining the brains to develop those particular, focusing techniques or whatever? Is that what it does?
It is. And the beauty of this is we're all considered non-invasive. So it isn't that we're applying anything to the brain. We use sensors. But, people say, are you going to shock me? It's like, no, it's going to be shocking.
Right.
No, we're not doing any of that because in kind of the traditional or kind of the formal understanding of neurofeedback. There are many different types out there, by the way. Some do apply certain kind of stimulations to the brain. This one doesn't. Mm-hmm. So this really is a child or an adult through the practice and the repetition, which is how the brain learns, using this program repeatedly, then that literally trains that part of the brain that's weak.
Oh, wow.
So we're
that is
strengthening
amazing.
These neuronal pathways. And when we get those strengthened, it tends to halt. And the proof is that anything we have ever learned how to do, unless we've had an accident and damaged ourselves some way, we learn through repetition. So when we learned how to hold a pencil, we learned through repetition of remembering how to do that. Drive a car, walk across the room.
Right.
You don't necessarily think about when you stand up and walk across the room so much because it's an automatic process. And so what we want is for the brain to get to that automatic process with the processing so that as the brain gets stronger with this, then the brain continues to use these strengths. And through the repeated use of that as time goes on, it gets even stronger. I've had adults come back 5 years later and say, you know, I just want to let you know that my brain just keeps getting better.
Wow.
I've got some testimonials up on their website of people
you do.
Who were really struggling in their lives very desperately.
Right.
And this gives them the opportunity to just keep training the brain. And with children, it's kind of cute because once they come in and realize I'm not wearing a lab coat, they're not going to get a shot.
Right.
They're kind of okay when they find out they're going to work on a computer. It's like, really?
This will be fun. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, it really is. By the way, you mentioned your website. If you want to learn more about Dr. McReynolds and also pick up her book, we'll be showing that to you in just a little bit. Check out her website. It's Connie McReynolds, and it's ConnieMcReynolds.com. Got it? ConnieMcReynolds.com. And, of course, Dr. Connie is a licensed psychologist and specializes is certified in helping children and adults with ADHD and other developmental disorders and issues like that. And she's also, you know, worked on hundreds of articles and helped author so many periodicals. And also, this is her first. Is this your first book now? Right?
It really is. And
amazing.
I really thank you.
There it is.
Yes, I had wanted to write it some time back, but I didn't want to put it out there unless I gave people options to be able to get to the services.
Right, right.
I just felt like that was only going to be half of the story, and I didn't want that to be a disappointment to people to read about this and not feel like there was something that they could actually do to help their child or help themselves. And so it took a lot longer than I thought, but we got to the point a couple of years ago. Where I felt like, you know, we can get this out there to folks and it can make a difference to people. And so that's why it finally came out this year.
Oh, I'm so happy. And there's, again, there is so much research. And what's terrific is you give examples of some of the issues that a lot of these children and also adults. You talked about your 50-year-old patient who came in and was just frustrated, couldn't hold down a job. What's going on? What's the matter with my brain? You know, so we are able to sort of flesh that out and find out how to solve the ADHD. So ADHD is more prominent in children than adults, perhaps. Adults have ADD? Is that right? Or am I wrong?
Well, here's what I have learned over 15 years is that I remember a time where people were told, and parents were told, oh, your child will grow out of this when they get to adulthood.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I'm not so sure that's the case. I do think people can learn strategies for how to mitigate some of the challenges that they feel. And there's nothing wrong with finding what some are now calling your superpowers with this. And I get that.
Right, that's great.
My response to that is, how would you like to have your superpowers and not have the drag on yourself? You know, pulling you back in a lot of areas that you don't even know you're getting pulled back in.
So what if
it was just easier to use the superpowers that you do have? You're not going to lose anything by figuring out what this is and strengthening those areas that are a little bit weaker. You're still going to have all of the strengths that you have. You're just going to have more of them working. It's kind of like having an engine that's a super-powered engine and you're running on three cylinders instead of the six or the eight that you're supposed to be running.
Sure, sure.
You can get to your destination. It's just how hard are you working to get there?
Right,
and so what I have discovered is that a lot of adults don't call it ADHD, but they're coming in with anxiety. They're coming in with panic disorders. They're coming in with depression. They're coming in with a whole host of things. And when I run this assessment on them, lo and behold, we peel this thing back. And here are all these auditory and visual processing problems. I give them this assessment and they just break down and say, this is what I've been dealing with all my life. And it's like, probably. And the good news is, yes, we found it. Bad news, we found it. Good news, we found it kind of thing. And good news is there's something we can do about that if you want to.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, I can only imagine how frustrating that must be for everybody. In terms of diagnosing, you say you start at five years to 90 years. But is there a reason why you sort of wait until you test a five-year-old?
Well, I will say, right now we're working with a three-year-old.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Three-year-olds.
Okay.
So kind of the deciding factor here is I meet with the children. They have to be able to be at a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be able to tolerate having a sensor on their ear and a sensor on their scalp, and they have to be able to follow instructions, and they have to know how to click a mouse, and they have to be able to interact for 25 minutes or so, a couple, three times a day or a week. So there are children who can do that, younger children. But the assessment really is only standardized down to age six, so there's a lot of wiggle room in there, and some of these children can do it, some can't. We'll do what we can to see if we can figure out a little bit of what's going on. I think early intervention, of course, makes sense with this.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, we use those assessments kind of loosely. We look a lot at the behaviors and what the parents are reporting. I had a kindergarten child that had been kicked out of three kindergartens.
Oh, no.
Now, this isn't going to help this child one little bit.
Yes.
So, you know, if we can get this child in and figure out, is there something we can do to kind of help? The child didn't have auditory processing. Granted, it's, you know, again, we're loosely using those assessments, but it gets us in the ballpark for what we might need to work on.
Right.
And as we were working on that, and then he turned six, and, you know, then that is the floor for the assessment. And we can run the assessment and see really where we are. So it doesn't mean we can't. It's just unique to each child, what they're able to tolerate, kind of what the parents are able to manage along the way. And same on the other end. So I had a 91-year-old come in who didn't know how to use a mouse.
Sure.
Taught him how to use a mouse. And
I
worked
love it.
Cognitive functioning for him.
Right, right.
So we're at both ends of the spectrum. And really, if you can use a mouse, you can sit at a computer, and you can interact with us, you know, we have some ways to possibly help. I mean, I can't guarantee anything, and I don't think anyone
will. Right.
But,
you
know,
interesting.
We use the evidence, we use processes, we follow the protocols that are out there that are steeped in the research and the literature. And we see if we can help. The whole thing is just seeing if we can help. So that's the key.
Wonderful.
Here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the key.
And being able to help, people can access your program, find out more about it on your website. Would that be the best way that people? Okay.
And there's a contact form on there. So if they would like, they can fill out that contact form.
Sure.
I do offer kind of a free 15-minute phone consult for those.
That's great.
And there's a free brief assessment on the homepage as well for people if they want to just kind of see if their child is maybe in the ballpark for some of this. And the book, there's an ebook out, there's an audio book, and I did the audio book myself.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And so there are ways that people can get to the information if they need it.
So it has Dr. Connie McReynolds' calm voice on it. Safe. They know who you are. They understand. Here is her book, Solving the ADHD Riddle. Also, that applies to ADD as well. The Real Cause and Lasting Solutions to Your Child's Struggle to Learn. Also, if you are an adult struggling and have always struggled and thought, you know, there's a joke among adults when we have a, you know, like a brain fart or whatever, you want, we go, oh, that's my ADHD. Mm-hmm. And that's, but hey, mm-hmm. you know what? It sure might be. So
it might be.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It might be, because I think it, you know, really depending on which decade a person's in, there were or were not as much awareness as of about any of this. And, you know, there was some pretty harsh treatment of people. And it doesn't mean it's all gone away either. But I think our today world is little more well-informed due to programs like this and just the work that folks like you are doing.
Right.
To get things out, to let people know there are perhaps reasons that people are struggling. And if we can get to the bottom of that, then there might be some alternative ways that we can provide some hope and some guidance and some resolution. And that's really what I'm after. Let's get to the root of it and get a resolution in place so that this can
Beautiful.
And this person can go on and live a great life. That's what we're about.
That's right. That's exactly right. Thank you so much for all you do. It looks like we're just about out of time, which it always goes too fast. By the way, check out Dr. Connie McReynolds' website, Connie with a C, McReynolds, McReynolds.com, if you want to find out more information about her program and ADHD or ADD. Check it out. Thank you for being such a wonderful guest today on The Couch.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. I appreciate all you do. Take good care now, Connie. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And as I always say, take care of yourself first. Then you'll be great for others. Bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.